Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Jake Olson is coming to St. Thomas Academy to speak on Saturday. And it sounds like a Minnesota name, doesn't it? Jake Olson. He's actually from Southern California. And the reason that he's coming to tell his story is quite a story to tell. Long snapper, and has served in that capacity from time to time for USC, the Trojans. And you say, okay, well, how does that, where do we go from there? Well, long snapper who happened to be blind, lost his sight to cancer at age 12, wanted to see the Trojans play one more time before he had the final surgery. Pete Carroll got wind of his story, then the head coach at USC. And the rest is history, although I'm giving the Reader's Digest version to something that's much more emotional than that. Jake, thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Take me back, man. Take me back to, you know, you could see. And then, you know, some kids are born blind, and there's different ways that, people incur this. But when you knew that you were going to lose your sight, what was that period of time like leading up to the surgery when you knew that cancer was going to rob you of that?
Yeah, we had about a month and a half of actual time from when I found out to when the surgery date was planned. And so, obviously, it was a shock at first. The threat of me losing my eyes, you know, I lost my left eye at an early age, and I was obviously fighting for my right eye. And so the threat was there, obviously, that we could always lose my right eye, but I always assumed, you know, we'd have some treatment option, and that, you know, if we caught the cancer early enough, which we, you know, were, since we were doing, you know, very frequent checkups, we didn't have to lose my right eye. So to be told I was going to was disappointing, and was kind of a shock. But, more than that, it was scary. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty that comes with a life without sight that I realized, you know, of all the things I did with sight that I was going to have to relearn how to do without sight. So it was scary. It was sad. You know, I remember kind of having those thoughts of seeing things for the last time. And, you know, it was a very difficult moment of life. But, you know, I was very blessed to be around a lot of people, including my parents and my sister and obviously Coach Carroll and the USC program that was there for me, that, you know, took me under their wings and was able to help a boy going through a tough time and made it a lot better.
You had the right coach at the right time. I know Coach Carroll. He spent time here in Minnesota, and I visited him once at one of his USC practices, and I can just see when he heard that story how that would resonate with him because of who he is. What was it like when he reached out to you?
Well, I had no idea to what the extent of the invitation was, just because, you know, I was a huge USC fan, so just to be invited up to a practice was, you know, obviously a dream come true. But little did I know, just how much, I guess, I would be part of that team back in 2009. And, you know, he remained me. Everyone kind of became my big brother on the team. Coach Carroll was there for me. I mean, we made relationships in that the year that still are with me today. I mean, everyone who was on that team was impacted through, you know, me being there, and you know, I'd say, I know people would argue, but I benefited from it the most, and other people would say they did. So, I mean, this was a very special time. It was a very special season, and something that, you know, I'll never be able to pay Coach Carroll for.
So he moves on to the Seattle Seahawks, but you're still in the USC family. And eventually it comes time, and you get to, again, I'm shortening up a longer story, but you go to USC, and they allow you to walk on, and you get a chance to snap as a long snapper in a game. How much did you practice that? What was that like in high school? How did you master the craft?
Yeah, well, I didn't play my freshman and sophomore year of high school, but really wanted to get back out in the field. Football is a huge passion of mine in life, and so I didn't want to look back on high school and come to the realization that I missed out on playing high school ball. So I came upon the long snapping position, realized it was, you know, muscle memory, and it was a snap over and over again. So just to get down and perfect that snap and, you know, again, repeat it. And so I did. I learned how to do it the whole summer going into my junior year. You know, worked really hard every single day. and showed up fall camp my junior season, and you know, I was the best long snapper on the team, and started on varsity my junior senior seasons, and you know, went to a pretty prestigious high school in Southern California for football. So you know, we always had coaches, you know, college coaches watching our games, and Coach Stark came to a couple games, and you know, I'd go up and visit the team as well. But I remember one time I was visiting the team, Coach Stark said, you know, if you're planning on coming here, we'd love for you to snap on the team, and you know, there'll be a day where, you know, we'll get you playing time. And you know, so I went to, was able to get in, and obviously that came true. And then you know, I worked my butt off for 2 years to prove myself, and to you know, just work with the holders and make sure the timing was right and everything was good. And you know, sure enough, my junior season I got my first opportunity, and then obviously for the next 2 years got a couple more.
What was it like the first time you went out on the field and realized you were going to snap for USC?
It was surreal. I mean, it was absolutely surreal, and the fact that I obviously had seen and experienced so many games from the stands, and you know, could only imagine what it was like to actually be playing on that field and looked up to those guys. But being one of those guys out there was kind of incredible. And then also, I mean, just the fact that, you know, you're playing in a college football game, you're out there doing what you love, you're making an impact out there. I mean, it was a beautiful moment, I think, for, you know, myself obviously, but for everyone who's followed my story, just to kind of see that all come together.
Did you know that you had made the correct snap, that you had nailed it? Could you tell by crowd reaction, anything?
Yeah, no, I mean, I heard why I catch it, my holder, and we put it through, and you know, it was an awesome moment being out there. I mean, to be honest with you, I could have snapped it over the holder's head by 20 yards and still would have had fun being out there. I mean, it was just an awesome moment, you know, just to get out there. And you know, again, I love football. I love playing football, and that's one of the reasons why I didn't let blindness stop me from playing football. I wanted to do the things I loved, and I wasn't going to let blindness or anything stop me from participating in a game that I just absolutely was passionate for.
How would your life have been different if you had sight all along, and what would you have missed out on?
You know, that's what I say when people, you know, ask me. I say blindness was a setback, but it set me up for, you know, to probably play college football. You know, I love playing football, and I, you know, I don't know how good I would have become. I don't know if I'd ever play at USC, that's for sure. I mean, you know, I could speculate whatever, but no, I mean, it was, I sure wouldn't have inspired thousands of by doing so. And it's just, you know, it's been an awesome run of playing football and inspiring people. And I'm going to continue to do that the rest of my life and try to make an impact in every way I can. But, you know, I think there's so many blessings that have come from, you know, obviously me going blind, and there's a lot of hardships that come with it too. But overall, you know, it's absolutely become a setup for my life for incredible things. I can't wait to see what's in store as well.
Have you been able to take people in the blind community and say you're selling yourself short, you can do more? Has that happened frequently?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I get reached out to all the time from individuals that are going blind or, you know, have gone blind or that are blind. And yeah, you know, I obviously the message hits home for them, but you know, I think what's been really cool is we all face our adversity, and my story has been able to reach people who have nothing to do with eyesight. You know, we all face adversity in life, and there's people who need inspiration and hope in a lot of other situations. And so I've been able to help them, and, you know, I motivationally speak and go out and just try to help people in any way I can. And so it's been a really awesome part of the story.
And I shouldn't just say the people that are in the blind community or sightless, whatever it is. I mean, you've inspired people in all, because we all have things that we should be able to do that we don't do, and we sell ourselves short, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that a lot of it comes with just first, you know, recognizing that everyone gets their ticket punched at some point. And, you know, with that, everyone has excuses. And sure, some excuses are legitimate. But that doesn't mean you can't, or you have to forfeit on, you know, your hopes and dreams and your potential. You know, there might have to rearrange and adapt. You know, again, I wasn't going to be the star quarterback on the football field, but at the same time, that didn't mean I had to, you know, again, lose my ability to participate in the game that I loved. And that meant, you know, just finding a different way. And that's what I did.
And nobody has said to you, well, you should have just become a referee, right?
Hey, you know, kind of. Sometimes I thought I could see better than I've seen out there. So, but no, that's That's funny. Maybe I'll show up one day on the
yeah, work that one into your spiel, okay?
There we go. I love it. I love it.
Jake, have a great time at St. Thomas Academy on Saturday night. They're in for a treat.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Jake Olson, nice enough to join us. Lost his sight but didn't lose his vision. And he'll be speaking at St. Thomas Academy on Saturday night. What a treat that'll be for them. Pete Carroll, I got to know a little bit over the years and then visited him at USC. I'll tell you what came out of that next. Welcome back, Sports to the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO. Jake Olson was talking about Pete Carroll, the storied head coach at USC and now the Seattle Seahawks, also coached the New England Patriots, the New York Jets, and the Minnesota Vikings at one time. I had a chance many years ago through Paul Wiggin set me up, and the idea was to go out to USC and see a practice. And so we went out there, and Pete Carroll was the head coach, and they were number one team in the country at the time. They had that great run back at USC. And so we went to the practice, and I didn't know what we were going to find when we got there. I just knew that USC was a great team, and I was interested to see what it would be like. And I figured it would be like a standard football practice. You know, start with Cal and then move over to this, and a couple of drills here and there, and all that stuff. But it wasn't. They got out there and they started doing drills. And at every drill, they would hoop and holler, and they might throw the ball and have a fumble drill, and they'd have two lines, and everything was a competition. Everything they were competing in, they were competing to try to win. On top of that, they allowed the public to come watch these practices. And the theory was that Coach Carroll wanted them to have as many distractions around them as possible, i.e. people there surrounding it. And he believed that you got the most out of practice if you had competition on every drill. We were talking about earlier with the folks from Inner City Tennis that when you teach it, it's got to be games and it's got to be fun. It just can't be the fundamentals. You can incorporate the fundamentals in, but somehow you got to make it fun so they forget that it's drudgery. And so these players are yelling and screaming and they're getting after each other and who can catch the ball and all this and blah, blah, blah. But that's how they got through practice. And the thought was at the end of practice, if you've competed the whole time, you've got the most out of practice. But it also creates this great enthusiasm. This goes full circle, brings it onto the open of the show. What was he doing? What was Pete Carroll doing? He was creating a culture. When he invited Jake Olson to come be a part of the team, he thought that was an extension to create a culture. He wanted people to know that they were going to have fun when they went to practice. He had the elite. He had the best of the best. They were recruiting great players at the time, winning national championships. And so, therefore, it was hard to get on the field there. It was hard to win a spot on that team. But he believed you could create a family atmosphere if you had competition everywhere so that guys had a focal point and they forgot that they were practicing football. Then he went to the Seattle Seahawks and won a Super Bowl. And lost a Super Bowl, too. Remember, at the half-yard line there, they had the intercepted pass against New England. But he won one, he lost one. It looked like they were going to win two in a row. And I was talking to somebody about him, and they said, yeah, Pete brings a basketball in to the office. And he'll dribble the basketball down the hall, almost like it's nervous energy or just something to do. But they said, no. He wants everybody in that office to know that he's still a little kid and he's just having fun. So even though he's the head football coach, if you go out to any NFL headquarters, everything revolves around the head football coach. He makes most of the decisions. The general manager gets him the team, then it's his game. And so what they were saying to me was he'll dribble a basketball down the hallway, and everybody knows Pete's coming down the hall because they can hear the basketball. And he knows that. And he knows that everybody can hear it when he dribbles down the hall, and he wants people to know that the head coach is still, this is still a game, and he's still having fun. Here we go back to culture. he makes it look like, oh, this is just the way I roll, right? But everything he did at USC was premeditated. It all looked like it was loosey-goosey, and we just show up, and then we play hard, and we have fun, and we high-five. Everything had to do with culture, with creating a place where people wanted to work. He doesn't work all the time, and he's got the benefit of Russell Wilson as a starting quarterback for sure. But the point is, he put all of his emphasis on building a culture. He's had great players for sure. And he's, you know, they've lost some too. They've had bad offensive lines, late, all those things. But they've hung in there and been a playoff team most years and won a Super Bowl and won a national championship. And if you watch him operate, you realize everything he does has a purpose. It just doesn't look like it because he's so casual in how he goes about it. That's the same way it is for great organizations, great companies, great teams, right? They know who the leader is, and the leader creates the culture. The leader sets the tone so that people want to work there. And that's his whole goal. It's to set a tone so that people want to work there. Set a tone so that you want to be part of the Seattle Seahawks. That's a pretty good thing. And Jake Olson obviously benefited from it. A blind long snapper, and Pete seeing the story. And Pete used to go visit the homeless on Saturday mornings before games. And I'm not saying he's perfect and he has, and some people say he's got too much college, the pro game, all that, but he sure sustained himself for a long time. And it seems to me that his number one priority is creating the right culture. Boys volleyball in Minnesota. Is that the next big thing? We'll talk about it with the man who knows next. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Minnesota Twins are off tomorrow. They've already postponed it. They'll play a doubleheader on May 11th. That is the fishing opener. We'll look for a forecast for that down the road. It's just cold out there, too. I mean, you know, I don't get too uptight about last year's blizzard and this year's blizzard in April because I know it's only going to last a little while. I feel bad for the people that it, you know, get stranded or whatever it is. But it's just a little bit disturbing to keep going and to keep you get a little bit wore out. But then you also get to a point where you go, you know what? This is exactly what I signed up for. I decided to live in Minnesota. Nobody made me live here. I grew up here, and I didn't have a say in it. But since I got to be an adult, I've had a say in whether or not I live in Minnesota. And I've made the decision that I'm going to live in Minnesota. And I live with what comes our way in the wintertime. I get it. I understand it. And I say, okay, I can do this. I can do this for a little while. I can get through this because we always do. You know, last year was a miserable spring. We've had a series over the last several years of miserable Aprils. I mean, awful cold. I mean, you can't get outside. I was thinking about the high school teams in practice cold. Golf teams that are putting in classrooms in April because they can't go on the course. We have had a string of that over the last several years. We've had a couple of, you know, nice springs. A couple of years ago was nice. We had two springs in a row. There were people, I mean, it was snow drifts into May. And then last year, the blizzard hits. Shuts us down. And this year, the same thing. Shuts us down for who knows how long. And we survive it. I remember going out and hitting softballs last year in the contest before a Twins game on a Saturday afternoon. The Twins were playing, and it was the deal against T.C. Bear. And so I was the one hitting against T.C. Bear. When we got to the stadium and got out there, I think it was 28 degrees. 28 degrees, they were getting ready to play baseball. And it was completely unfair. Completely unfair because I had to go out there and hit my sweats and stay warm as best I could. And that bear had this thick coat of fur. Couldn't have been toast. I never heard him complain once about the weather. And he's cracking them out, you know, hitting home runs, and this, that big smile on his face, of course. On top of that, he was coming out of hibernation. And so he was incredibly well rested. He'd been sleeping for like 3-4 months, you know, in a cave or wherever they go. So, of course, he beat me. And I've challenged him to a rematch. I haven't heard a word, but I said, my terms, it's got to be in July. It's got to be sometime in July. And let's just say I'm yet to hear back. I'm yet to hear back. Boys volleyball is a hot topic in Minnesota. It's continuing to grow in popularity. It's a club sport. 800 kids are playing it, 50 different teams. The man that really started this thing, Walt Weaver, one of the real godfathers of volleyball in the great state of Minnesota. Girls volleyball, boys volleyball, has coached it all. And he came up with this initiative, this idea that makes all the sense in the world. And now as it goes, and this is not unusual, it takes a while to get done, which you know should get done in rather short order because of the politics, the red tape, and things that go into it. He joins us now. Walt, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Mike. Good talking. I appreciate you taking the time to talk volleyball.
Yeah, well, we go through these critical junctures, and a lot of times you'll feel defeated, but you're not. The latest one was a little bit of a setback. Explain where boys volleyball is on the hierarchy of going from here's a good idea to this could be a state high school league sponsored sport.
All right. Well, that's a lot. Boys volleyball, not only in Minnesota but in the nation, has gained steam, a lot of it, over the past several years. And along with Hugh McCutcheon, we got the idea that because Minnesota is such a great volleyball state, this would be a great place to incorporate boys volleyball into Minnesota high schools. That was about 16 months ago that we got on that. And the purpose was to get it sanctioned as a Minnesota State High School League sport, just as girls volleyball is sanctioned as a Minnesota High School League sport. And so in the first year, in talking with Dave Stead at the time, he said, well, if it's going to happen, and it is the high school league's goal to create new opportunities for kids, and he said, if it's going to happen, you've got to show that there's a high level of interest.
Yep.
And, you know, get it going in that way. And so that was our main goal in the first season. And as you know, we had 22 schools and about 400 boys playing last year. And we put it in front of the Minnesota State High School League to sanction it. And the regional process that they have, there are 16 regions, 9 have to vote for it. It was voted against 11-5. That was in this first year. And so they said, well, you know, that shows good interest, but you even to have a state tournament, you have to have 32 teams at least. So you guys are doing well, but you're going to have to show that the interest is higher and that's, it's sustainable over the years. And so, you know, the second year we went into it with that thought. And as you know, what happened, we went to 50 schools playing. And by the way, there are 70 schools that are part of that 50 high schools playing. In other
words, some consolidations, yeah.
Yes. And so there's actually 70 schools, high schools, involved in this in terms of the kids from different places. So, but anyway, we did that. And there's, you know, between 800 and 1,000 kids playing here right now this year. So we felt that we showed the sustainability. We showed that the interest more than doubled. And there's a tremendous surge of interest in the country, but especially in Minnesota. I think we're a leader, and certainly the high school league has always been a leader in the nation in terms of an activity association. There's no question that they're at the top of the game in terms of an activity association. I mean, they're awesome. And so, you know, we felt we had done our due diligence in creating what David said, and in the meantime, we had talked to Eric, the new executive director, and he talked to us about the state tournament possibility of 32 teams and continuing to show that the interest was high and so on. So we did all that, and we even met with the regions in the summer, the secretaries that run them, and educated them, and so on and so on and so on. So the regions voted again, and they voted 12-4 against. So we didn't know quite what that meant. We had done everything that we felt we should, and yet the regions made up of super, you know, these committees are made up of superintendents, principals, and so on. They still either, you know, found a reason to vote against it. And so that's when we went to the high school league and said, you know, it isn't working very well to go through the regions. We've done everything we can. And they voted even more against it this year than last year. And so we tried to get some relief from the state high school league by saying, well, is it possible that we could move this on to the representative assembly? Could the board of directors ask to have it put in front of the representative assembly? It doesn't mean that they would vote for it, but we are trying to get the conversation to continue on. And of course, what happened was we ended at a meeting. We had a lot of great speakers, boys that are going to participate, and Hugh McCutcheon was there to talk about it. A Northern State coach up by Duluth and Floodwood came down and said that he had gotten 6 schools to do it up there, and more were coming. And so there, you know, we tried to indicate to the board of directors how high the interest was also. And there were several coaches from the club league side that also spoke about how big a deal it was in their school. St. Paul Johnson was there, and they have new teams this year. St. Paul Harding had 70 boys try out.
Wow.
And they felt bad they had to cut, but they kept one more JV team, I think. But that culture, I mean, the diversity angle here of this being a sport that can get into those schools and create something for these kids that aren't doing anything, we tried to point that out. And so we did that, and there was one speaker against. At the end, I believe he is the AD at Wayzata. He spoke against it.
What was the reason?
Well, he had several reasons. The irony here is that a lot of the teams in the metro area are on. He said he was speaking for himself at Wayzata. I don't know about at Wayzata, but he was pointing out things, and he said he also represented the Lake Conference, and it's those places that he's the AD at the biggest school in the state of Minnesota. I mean, there has to be a lot of boys in that school that want to play and that would give them an opportunity and so on. So anyway, his reasons, he had, I think he went through several, but it's the age old, we don't have facilities. We don't have money. The process that you're following. One of the things he talked about that he said that the high school league and the board of directors voting to put this in front of the representative assembly violates the process because they're sort of going above the regions. But the board of directors does have cases where they take it upon themselves to put something in front of the region because it just isn't working out in a place where it looks like it should. They talked about it being an emergency, that they would only have to, they could only do this if it was an emergency. Well, anyway, he pointed that out. And he pointed out that the ADs of the world that he's in have a lot of things on their plate. And another one isn't right now isn't necessary. He made the comment that he wasn't against boys volleyball, but the timing is wrong. But my question would be, when is the timing ever going to be
good?
I've been involved in education for 40 years, and I do not recall a year where we had enough money, where we had enough facilities, or that everybody was going, you know what, I don't have enough on my plate. And so if it's not now, what is anybody going to know like if we'll go back to the high school league this coming fall and say, you know, okay, we're going to submit our proposal again, but it'll go in front of the regions again. And what will they know that they don't know now? Nothing.
I get what you're saying, Walt, but I'm a big believer that there are people out there that think we just have to make you work hard at it and then all of a sudden it gets in, just like lacrosse, trap shooting, all those things. And eventually, once it's in, everybody forgets about that. So as your friend Hugh McCutcheon says, don't die on the hill, you know, going up there for a cause like this. There's too much to be gained by capturing the hill. And I think you guys are doing everything right. You just got to keep doing it, because to me, this is a no-brainer. In the spring, those gyms aren't being used. And we're talking about giving kids that aren't playing a sport a chance to play a sport, and that's all you need to know. You know, it's a good cause. So I don't think for a minute that you're off track here.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that there's a great deal. I mean, we have right now, like we said, 50 schools involved and 70 total, and by and large, the athletic directors in those schools are unbelievable. I mean, I've been involved a little bit with East Ridge, and the athletic director there is so supportive.
Yeah, I know her. Yep, I met her this last time. Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's a wonderful person, and that's by and large true across the board. And I'm sure the Wyzetta AD means well, and I'm sure he's sincere in what he's saying, and we understand his points, but I think that The interest in this is so overwhelming.
Yeah, the interest is going to carry the day, Walt. I wouldn't even be – you guys just keep doing what you're doing, and it'll take care of itself, I guarantee you. And we'll keep doing what we're doing here to advocate for it on the media side, too.
Well, that's always appreciated, for sure.
No, you guys are – you got a great cause. You're doing it for the right reasons. Those things work themselves out, and they will have no choice but to pass this. It's just a question of when, not if. So I have to let you go, but keep up the great work, you and Hugh, and just keep on going back and going back and going back and selling the message, because this one's just, to me, this is a layup, and it will get done.
All right. Well, a guy like you who can play basketball the way you do, if you think it's a layup, then I'm impressed.
Appreciate you, sir. Keep it going.
All right, Mike. Thank you.
Yeah, I love guys like that. Walt Weaver, he does it. It's not just, he's not getting anything out of this, except he wants to see more kids get more opportunities to play and be a part of a varsity team. That's what he's getting out of it, that he wants more boys to have a chance to play a sport that he thinks they'll like and have that special experience of playing in a high school team. That's what he gets out of it, period. Same with Hugh McCutcheon. Hugh McCutcheon's not going to get to recruit these kids. He coaches the women's team. They don't have men's volleyball at the University of Minnesota. Title IX does that in. But he believes that it's worth fighting for, because he believes that the kids will enjoy the sport enough and get enough out of it. They're not getting anything out of this. They're just trying to give back. They're just trying to give back and get more opportunities for kids. Oh, boy, isn't that terrible? More opportunities for kids to have a more fulfilling high school career. You guys just keep doing what you're doing out there, and boys volleyball will be a part of our natural high school menu soon. Henry Lake on what's coming up on his show next. He's back, all right, and he's right here. Henry, I am disappointed in the Timberwolves season, and I'm disappointed in their future as we look at it right now. Tell me why there's a ray of optimism here.
Disappointed in the future? Man.
Why would you be optimistic about it?
I don't have enough information to not be optimistic. Look, I'm optimistic in the fact that you have Karl Anthony Towns, and to me, he showed more growth in this year than he showed the first couple of years.
No question.
In a Timberwolves jersey.
So, no question. The problem that I have with it is that's kind of where it begins and ends.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you on that note. Also, I'm a little bit optimistic in the fact that Andrew Wiggins, as much as he's been, what's the word that we like to use, enigma?
Yeah.
He's been better the last couple of weeks.
And I
went on a rant last night, and I said, and I tend to go on rants, and I said, this is the Andrew Wiggins that we need to see nightly. Not the Andrew Wiggins that's going to show up once a month or a couple of times a month. This is a guy that we need to see every single night.
And there lies the question. How do you get that out of him every day? Now, we had Sam Mitchell on the other day, and he says, I don't mean tell him what to do, but play him at two guard because then he's a mismatch all the time and he's got a big advantage. Don't play him a small forward. Play him at two guard. Now, obviously, Sam was here and had Wiggins, and, you know, he at least merits a listen, I guess.
Oh, I have no issue with that because he's quick enough to defend two guards. He's clearly quick enough to defend threes when he's playing the three. But he's a versatile player. He's multidimensional. He just has to be more consistent. So the reason why I have a little bit of optimism is because, number one, I'm a Timberwolves fan and I'm a geek that way.
God, I love watching the NBA. I love it.
I know. So I'm a basketball fan at heart. But the bottom line is, I'm not going to throw in the towel on my Timberwolves yet.
No, but I want some reason to say if I was sitting out there in the open market, this is why I'd buy season tickets next year. I want to believe that there's a good reason to.
I think that, well, look, when it comes to NBA basketball, there's an easy selling point, okay? That easy selling point is that every NBA star comes to your arena for at least
I know,
a game.
And I love that.
I love that.
You
love
that. I love that. You love that. But the masses want to see a win, you know?
In Major League Baseball, you don't always get an opportunity to see Bryce Harper.
Well, plus, I mean, the NBA stars are different because they're such a focal point. And you can feature them every possession. It's not four at-bats. It's not, you know, only when the offense or defense is on the field. You get to feature them anytime you want. It is special.
Hey, and this is another reason, Maxie, why you should be optimistic at least. Just knowing that Karl Anthony Towns is on the roster. As he continues to get better and grow, if Ryan Saunders ends up being the coach, if they end up at least adding a piece or two, there's no telling what the possibilities could be like. And the reason why I say that is because there's a team right down the road that's the number one team in the East right now.
60-22 or 61-21, Milwaukee?
And a couple of years ago, I don't think that anybody – was speculating that that team could be the best team in the NBA.
Now they're a destination city. Guys want to go play, right? Because they can be a piece. They'll take the cut and salary to go play for them.
With the Greek Freak, if he resigns, he hasn't gotten a new contract yet. So we'll see how that thing plays out. No one's going to jump there yet until they see what type of money he's going to make.
But it can happen that quickly if you believe.
Yep. And if you draft the right individuals. You know, when you get a Malcolm Brogdon in the second round and he ends up being the rookie of the year, I mean, those are the type of things that you need. That's
the San Antonio model where they bring over somebody from overseas. You go, who's that? And then he scores 20 and you go, how'd they find him?
If you want to call that luck, that is the type of luck that the Timberwolves
need. I call it scouting
too. But we haven't been good at developing and scouting.
No, and that just issue. And the longer I go, the more I love the NBA because it's just they've created the rules so that there's so much freedom, and sometimes that might look like bad defense, but if you watch it close, a lot of times it's just unbelievable, freakish athletes making unbelievable plays that you can't believe they can make. And I love it. Okay, what's coming up on your show? I don't want to say short here.
Well, at 9:30, we're going to have Sergeant Jeremiah Simonson from the Rosemount Police Department on to talk about a fundraiser that I saw and came across a couple of days ago. I want to give him some time to talk about what they're doing with this 9th annual Ballin' in D.C. charity basketball tournament in Burnsville. So we'll talk to him at 9:30. And then also we'll get into everything that's going on in the NBA coaching circles as well as we'll talk to Dustin Morris, Senior Director of Communications for the Minnesota Twins, about everything
about
that went
the
into,
NBA?
About the postponements.
Okay, postponements. You get me confused. And David Josephson will hold in as well. Henry Lake is next on WCCO.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.